Hello, this is Jack Eyre. I'm resident scholar at the American Bankruptcy Institute. We're here for another in a series of conversations with bankruptcy professionals in which we try better to understand the system and how they do their work in it. You know, Chapter 13 trustees don't often explain themselves. This may be because their job is hard to explain, or it may be just because they're busy. Robin Weiner, our guest today, manages a full docket of Chapter 13 cases, and a large staff and an impressive bank account, and in between time she has to cope with the occasional hurricane. Robin Weiner, welcome to ABI Podcast.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Did I get the pronunciation right?
You certainly did.
Okay, how about alligators? Do you deal with alligators down there too?
Actually, we've known to see a few in the canals around by where I live.
Okay. Where precisely are you? I guess it's north of Miami somewhere?
I'm in West Fort Lauderdale.
West Fort Lauderdale.
Right.
Okay. And you are the Chapter 13 trustee there?
I am in the northern division of the Southern District of Florida.
How long have you been at it?
Since July of 1993, approximately 13 years.
And I guess you told me 13 years at it, and I guess you told me that you'd been a lawyer for, what, about 2.5 years when you took this on?
I went back to law school as a, shall we say, older woman after a long career in education, and was very fortunate to be appointed about 2.5 years after I graduated.
That does sound like a formidable start to me. 2.5 years in, what was your first day like?
I had no staff, I had no money, I had no computer, and I had no idea what I was doing.
You had agreed to it.
Because Don Walton made a very convincing suggestion, and I'm very glad I listened to him. I put one foot in front of the other, and we began.
Who was Don Walton?
Don Walton presently is the acting deputy director of the executive office of the United States Trustee. At the time, he was the United States Trustee who appointed me in the Southern District. Actually, it's Region 21.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were a district without a Chapter 13 program at that point?
Actually, there was a Chapter 13 trustee who administered the cases for the entire district, but at the time, the executive office decided to appoint me. They had decided they were going to split the district because of the large volume of cases that my predecessor was handling.
Mm-hmm. How many cases do you have now?
Well, that's an interesting question. How many cases do I have now versus how many did I have 2 years ago? I presently am administering about 4,700 cases, and we have been experiencing a decline in case filings and a dramatic increase of early payoffs. So I was at a high of about 6,000 cases 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Decline and early payoffs. Are they two separate questions? Why the decline and then why the early payoff?
I actually believe they're related. We've been experiencing a dramatic increase in property values in the Southern District of Florida for the past 2 or 3 years. I'm sure you've heard about that. Mm-hmm. And as a result, people who would ordinarily have filed bankruptcy are refinancing their properties, taking the money out, and paying down their debt so they do not have to file bankruptcy. In addition, people who are already in bankruptcy are taking this money to pay off their bankruptcies, thus the early payoffs and the early completions of their cases.
Equity loans to clear out the Chapter 13.
I'm sorry?
You're doing equity loans to clear out the Chapter 13.
Correct, or to avoid filing bankruptcy at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. How's the real estate market down there now? You said it's been going up. Is it still going up?
It seems to be leveling off, but we don't know. And it seems that the lenders are starting to make it a bit more difficult for people to refinance their properties, but we really won't know the effect for about a year.
It's interesting you're telling me this story without reference to how, if at all, your life might have changed last October. And I guess, did your life change last October?
Well,
when the new bankruptcy amendments came into effect?
My life continues to change, shall we say, because we've experienced this reduction in filings as a result of refinancing. We've also experienced problems for debtors making their payments because of the hurricanes we've experienced. So we've received a decline, or I should say an increase in delinquencies as a result of people not being able to work for a week or two or whatever it is, or having to make repairs to their homes. And then we faced October 17th. My filings prior to the refinancing surge were about 250 to 300 cases a month. I received approximately that amount. It reduced down to about 150 to 200 cases a month. And I should say between October 17th and the end of December, we received 40 cases.
Hmm.
But we're on the increase because we received 66 cases in January.
Huh.
So it's hard to tell where we're going. We're hoping that case filings will pick up, and we're hoping that the people in our community will be able to continue to work, and that we won't experience any more hurricanes like we have in the past 2 years.
I'm still trying to process those numbers. I guess leading up to October 17th, I guess we've all heard about this great surge of Chapter 7 filings in the weeks immediately pre-October 17th. But as a Chapter 13 trustee, that did not directly affect you in any way, or did it?
Well, actually it did. We received 630 cases 2 weeks prior to the filing.
Your new Chapter 13s?
New Chapter 13s. And we are still processing those cases. We also believe that we received that many cases, some of which came from the Palm Beach area, because there had been a moratorium on foreclosures after the hurricanes. I believe the courts lifted the moratorium and the foreclosures began, thus precipitating the need to file the Chapter 13 case.
Maybe you were partly answering that. I was curious if you had a theory as to what led to that 600-case surge right before.
That's part of it, but I think the other part is that all this publicity about how difficult bankruptcy filings were going to be after October 17th piqued an interest with the public, and part of the increase in 13s was a result of that. However, 650 cases for me certainly doesn't come close to the 13,000 cases we received in the Southern District during those 2 weeks.
Okay. I guess it is the case that the 2005 amendments made the Chapter 13 discharge less attractive for debtors than was the case prior to October 17th. But did debtors know that? Do you think people were coming to your court for that reason?
I don't think the majority of Chapter 13 debtors are concerned about the super discharge. I think the majority of Chapter 13 debtors are concerned about keeping their homes and avoiding foreclosures.
Yeah, that's leading into my next question, I guess, and maybe this is a repeat, but who does file for Chapter 13 in your part of the world?
My debtors are older people who can no longer live on their pensions. My debtors are emergency room doctors who cannot live on the salaries that they're making due to the high student loan costs. My debtors are single
parents.
Say
that one again. You've got emergency room doctors who are having trouble paying their student loans.
We have many doctors who have trouble paying their student loans. Mm-hmm. We have lawyers, all kinds of professionals who filed bankruptcy because of the huge student loan debt that they have incurred. And as a result of the non-discharge, Chapter 7 doesn't work for them, they come into Chapter 13.
Mm-hmm.
We see single parents. We see all kinds of people, teachers and police officers. The debtor in Chapter 13 in the Southern District of Florida is anybody and can be anybody anywhere.
Okay, anybody anywhere, but I think I heard you mention two or three times the matter of home ownership. Do you think you have a higher number of ownership cases than some people do, or...?
I suspect that might be true. I think there are trustees across the country who see many cases. Most of their caseload is based upon debtors' vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We see down here, at least in my area, I would say the great majority is homeowners.
Mm-hmm. I guess you told me when we were talking earlier something about in your district, they're filing to save their homes, and in Miami, they're filing to save their cars.
Well, I don't know specifically, but in discussions with the trustee in Miami, it seems that we have more homeowners in the northern end, and she has more people in the southern end trying to save their cars, which explains the uniqueness of Chapter 13 in a way. We all have different situations and different debtors in each of our districts across the country.
We'll be back after a short break. We'll rejoin the ABI podcast after this break for current news and bankruptcy. This week, we learn of a Chapter 11 filing by London Fogg, the maker of raincoats and outerwear. News reports say this will be London Fogg's second trip down the road of bankruptcy. While the company came out of Chapter 11 just 5 years ago in 2001, a cursory web search says otherwise. Apparently, this will not be the second bankruptcy by the company, but rather the fourth. In an earlier incarnation, known as London Town, the company passed through Chapter 11 back in 1991. The predecessor to London Town had gone through bankruptcy back in the 1930s during the Great Depression. London Fogg's case, well, cases, provides good insight into the fact that not all Chapter 11 reorganization plans are guaranteed to be successful. In order to confirm a Chapter 11 plan, one of the things that the court has to find is that the confirmation of the plan is not likely to be followed by liquidation or the need for further financial reorganization. This is the so-called feasibility test, designed to make sure that the plan has at least some chance of success. Apparently, it is not easy to get it right. A lot of debtors do, in fact, file for Chapter 11 a second time. While the apparel business has always been tough, it would have seemed that the London Fogg would have had an advantage given the location of its headquarters, Seattle, Washington. If you can't make money selling raincoats in Seattle, then times are very tough indeed. Thank you for listening to Current News and Bankruptcy. This has been John Hartkin of the ABI.
Years, those dim times 13 years ago when you said you were encouraged to set yourself up for this kind of job, what do you think made you a likely candidate to be a Chapter 13 trustee?
Actually, I should say I applied for the position and Don Walton accepted my application.
Okay. You applied for it?
I did.
So you thought you had qualifications to be a Chapter 13 trustee?
I did.
Okay.
I think that having been an educator taught me how to help and teach other people. And I continue to try to do that. I try to bring knowledge to my debtor and creditor bar, the knowledge that I gain from going to conferences and reading and listening to other authorities in the area. So I think I have the ability to help other people understand the process. I was a bit more mature when I applied for this position, so I think I bring with me the experience of life. I tend to be a pretty decent businesswoman, and I felt confident in my ability to be able to run an organization like I'm running.
Mm-hmm. Had you run a business before? Have you done this?
No.
Okay.
But I thought I could, and thank goodness I was able to do it with a lot of help from a lot of professionals.
How big is your operation down there? A lot of staff, I suppose?
I had as many as 33 employees, and due to the declining caseload, I've reduced my staff to 21. So we've reduced staff, we've reduced our my expenses, I've reduced my office space in an attempt to be very conscientious and cautious with the money that I spend.
Do you have lawyers on staff?
I have a staff attorney who assists me.
Do you do any lawyer work yourself?
I certainly do.
Yeah, sure. Good. Yeah. Yeah, tell me what your life is like. How many days a week are you in court, for example?
I would say I'm in court, I'm in hearings at least 3 days out of the month, sometimes four. I preside over 341 meetings of creditors. Well, now we are hoping to preside over one or two days of 341 meetings of creditors. But there were years that I presided over five, maybe 6 days of 341 meetings. But we're not certain what's going to happen as we go forward.
So distinguishing 341s from court, as we should, I guess.
Well,
341 is not court, is it?
It's correct. It's meetings of creditors.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with the rest of your time?
I run an office. Mm-hmm. I review files. I speak to debtors, attorneys, creditors' attorneys. And I'm also working on preparing the NACTT's annual conference for Denver at the present time.
Yeah, tell me what the initials stand for.
The National Association of Chapter 13 Trustees.
Mm-hmm. You were, say again, you're preparing materials?
I am the vice president, and my duty as vice president is to prepare our annual conference. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the process of creating the agenda, contacting speakers, making the arrangements.
Sure. You said you'd been an educator before you were a lawyer. What did you do exactly? Were you a school teacher? Or?
I have a master's degree in speech and language pathology, and I am also certified in gifted education.
You do. You talked about teaching and opportunities for teaching. Do you do direct debtor education in your program?
I have done direct debtor education. I am. I ran a pilot program for Region 21 a number of years ago, and I enjoyed it very much. However, I came to find, and as we all did, that without the mandatory requirement of debtor education, people just did not come to the classes. Those people who came benefited from the material, but it was very difficult getting people to attend. And if there is anything from this new act that I think is beneficial, it's certainly financial management. I think that is hopefully will make a difference for people, learning new ways of managing their money when they get out of bankruptcy. But having said that, we can't always manage for the surprises. And I think part of what we need, the message we need to bring, is that there will be surprises, and we can't always plan exactly for what's going to happen in our future.
Do you know how many of your plans complete down there?
I would say my plans, my completion rate tracks the national completion rate. And I would hate to put a number on it, but the last time I looked at the statistics, I would say it was somewhere around 40%.
Good. Do you have any sense so far post-October of the impact of consumer credit counseling? Debtors have to go to counseling now before they can file for relief?
I know it's a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that we've already experienced the cases where debtors are not eligible for bankruptcy because they haven't taken the classes or they haven't been certified timely. I know that we have a couple of judges who have already ruled that way. I know that debtors are paying for credit counseling and then filing bankruptcy as if they would have without paying for the credit counseling.
Hmm.
Thus taking whatever.
I mean, they paid the money and not got anything substantive out of it? Or?
Well, time will tell. I suspect that what we will see is that this is an exercise that doesn't necessarily help debtors.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was struggling for is whether you've seen any substantive impact from the credit counseling, and it sounds to me like you just said that, well, not yet.
It's too soon to tell.
I
suspect we won't.
Uh-huh. Okay. Can you elaborate on that? Why do you think not? Well, let me try this and see what you think.
I'm thinking of the best way to say that.
No, go ahead if you want. I was going to give a guess, and I may be wrong, that it was Congress's expectation that if debtors went to credit counseling, the counselors could say, oh, here's a way you can solve your problem without bankruptcy. And the counselors are finding that, no, a lot of these people are really broke, and there may not be ways to solve their problem.
I would think most of them are, and I would think that most of us would agree that credit counseling is not necessarily the answer to these people's problems.
But I heard you, I guess, before distinguishing the matter of debtor education.
I believe debtor education is an excellent tool. We can all benefit from classes on financial management. And I strongly have always encouraged debtors to take these classes. I think it would be wonderful if financial management is mandatory in high school or perhaps mandatory in college. I think you see many people start to get into trouble very early on because they haven't had the, I guess, the knowledge or the education as to ways to prevent financial problems early on in their lives.
You know, can you tell yet whether you've had any 707D motions in your court down there? Do you see debtors showing up who have been debarred from Chapter 7 because they booked the means test?
We have seen 707B motions down here historically. I think that the 707B motions I don't see many of them yet. I think, again, it's too early in the process. I also believe that the attorneys down here, once they hear from the United States trustee, tend to convert voluntarily. I don't know what is going to happen. I suspect it won't be very much different than it has been in the past.
Okay. You, when we talked before, you talked about hurricanes, and I gather that hurricanes are no joke in that part of Florida.
No joke.
Okay. I guess you said they are one source of debtor cases in the Chapter 13 docket, but I gather you were working about hurricanes also with reference to managing your business down there, right?
Hurricanes are unpredictable disasters, or can be unpredictable disasters, just as a fire can be an unpredictable disaster, or an earthquake, or a flood, or even a blizzard.
No, I guess what I'm asking is, what's your office building look like?
Well, and my point is that we always need to prepare for the worst. And I sit in a three-story office building surrounded by windows with trees right up against the windows. And whenever there is a threat of a hurricane, we need to gather up as much as we can, our computer systems and our paperwork and everything we can, and bring them to a safe location. I send my tapes off-site to my computer software company so that we can always have secure backup tapes. It's a very real problem for us down here.
I guess there's an old saying that people who live in glass houses shouldn't live in hurricanes.
And we all do. We all live in glass houses.
Got it. Robin, how's this job changed over, 13 years?
How has this job changed? I don't really think it has.
Mm-hmm.
I make it a policy in my office. I live by the mantra that this is about people, not paper. And I make it a point of bringing each member of my staff to a 341 meeting of creditors or to the confirmation hearings to see that this is about people. The rules might change, the process might change, but the people don't change. And the job truly does not change.
Well, you know, from an outsider, or at least a lazy outsider, this sounds like a difficult and demanding day-to-day job here, but you sound like you like it.
I love it. Okay. I think we do a real service to the public. I have never stayed in a job as long as I have this one, and the feeling you get when a debtor thanks you for helping them, and trust me, I don't do anything other than perhaps show some kindness to debtors. I do my job. I file the difficult motions. I take the difficult positions. But when you know you're helping somebody or somebody is being helped by the process, that's what makes it real.
Maybe you've said this already, but what does help mean? What counts as a success in this realm? What kind of thing that gives you satisfaction?
That's an excellent question, because success doesn't necessarily mean that a debtor has completed a plan. Success might mean that the debtor or a person, I don't want to say the debtor, a person might buy an extra little bit of time to get a job or buy some time to refinance their property or sell their property, to reduce the anxiety of receiving phone calls 24/7 because they haven't been paying their bills. And then the satisfaction for creditors is that we help them get paid.
Mm-hmm.
whether it's throughout the entire length of the plan or for a specific time, we help them get paid.
Good. You talked about real estate cases as a predominant part of your docket there. Do you have any kind of guess as to how often you get to keep people in their homes?
I would say 80-90% of my debtors stay in their homes for a period of time. Some cure the arrearage, some are unable to, but it offers them the opportunity to stay in their homes.
Robin, this has been a delight, but I talked about how hard you work, and I'll let you get back to work.
Why, thank you, Jack. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Thanks for talking to us today.
Okay.
You've been listening to one of a series of podcasts that we are producing here at the American Bankruptcy Institute to help us all understand better how bankruptcy professionals do their work. We hope you found it helpful. Look on our webpage at abiworld.org for more podcast choices. This is Jack Eyre saying thank you for listening.